Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have a fantastic episode for you all today. And how about this? Episode 150 of the podcast, and we're getting it in right at the buzzer. I am recording this on December 31st, 2024, the final episode of 2024. Very exciting stuff. I'm trying to recall what episode I was. I think I've done just under 100 this season, because I think one of my final few in 2023, it would have been, 2023, was around episode 55 or something. So an incredible year of the Surprise Jab Podcast, over 5,000 downloads. I know that can be better, but we will work to improve this podcast, but also it's just fun to do in my spare time. On today's episode, we will be recapping all the action from week 17 of the NFL season, discussing the playoff implications, as well as I will be ranking the top 10 new movies I saw in 2024 that came out in 2024. We did this last year. We'll be doing it again. New things in pop culture, new UFC fights, and we will be ending the episode with our official 2024 UFC awards. That's right, this is the award show for the UFC. We have 8 awards we'll be giving out this year. I'm excited for it. Strap in, we're in for a fun time on today's episode. And kicking things off, as always, new UFC fights, new UFC news. I mean, let me get the big one out of the way. I don't believe Conor McGregor is going to fight Logan Paul. There's no way. There is no way he's actually going to do that. I mean, Conor McGregor's stock is at an all-time low. I mean, it's at negative right now. But if he takes a $250 million fight each, him and Logan Paul, just to fight each other in Saudi Arabia, it's such a joke. I don't care. I didn't care about the Mike Tyson fight. I barely cared about Usyk and Fury. You know, boxing, I'm completely sick of. UFC, MMA is the spot to be. Please don't make this fight. So that's out the way. In terms of UFC fights, we've had 3 new fights announced in the last few days. Nothing too big as of right now as the new year begins to kick off. First one, UFC 312, of course, in Sydney, Australia. Bantamweight action as Cody Haddon takes on the debuting Alexander Topuria. That is right, the younger brother of the greatest featherweight of all time, Ian Topuria. That's right, I'm saying it. He's the greatest featherweight of all time. I'm saying it. It's controversial. I'm saying it. But Cody Haddon, Alexander Topuria. Alexander is 5-1. Of course, hails from Georgia and Spain. I don't really recognize any of the guys he's beaten, but you know what? He's 28 years old, hungry for a victory. Cody Haddon, 8-1 professionally, 1-0 in the UFC with a win over Dan Argueta. Seems like more of a grappler last time out. Should be interesting. I'll probably ride with Topuria, but I kind of get the vibe. He's kind of like the Muhammad Usman to the Kamaru Usman, if you get what I'm saying there. And that means it's not as good as his older brother. Another fight for you. This one, UFC Saudi Arabia, going down February 1st. Lightweight action, Fares Zayam back in action. The Smile Killer, fresh off of his dirty knee knockout of Matt Frivola. 16-4 professionally, 6-2 in the UFC. He hails from France, and he takes on Mike Beast Boy Davis. Mike is 4-1 in the UFC. Big wins over Mason Jones, Nathan Levy, Vyacheslav Borshev. Good wins all around. You know, I've seen him lean on his grappling, seen him lean on the striking. He's 11-2 professionally. This will be a big telltale sign if he can hang in the UFC, as he is turning 33 next year. So he's getting to those years where you really need to dial it up, especially in a division like the lightweight division. I'm probably going to back Fares Zayam. I love what I've seen from him so far. And that knockout of Matt Frivola, still not over that. That was so hype. Final fight, and I'm excited for this one. UFC Vegas 103, March 1st. The fact this doesn't have a crowd pisses me off so much. Lightweight division again. Nasrat Haqparast takes on Esteban Ribavix. Esteban Ribavix back in action. Guys, if you don't know who Esteban is, he is an absolute legend. We're going to be talking about him later on our award show. I mean, holy cow, his knockout of Terrence McKinney this year, his fight of the year contender against Daniel Zaluber. I mean, this dude's an absolute killer. And as for Nasrat, I mean, picked up a win over Jared Gordon this year, also was on a little win streak with wins over Jamie Malarkey and Joachim Silva. Nasrat Haqparast turning his career around, 9-4 in the UFC, 17-5 professionally. I'm excited for this one. That's one of the better Apex fights that I think I've seen. You know, usually they're giving us these lame, lousy UFC Apex fights, but actually blessing us with a good one right there. But that's all the new UFC news we have. I know nothing much. Only three fights, the rumored Conor McGregor and Logan Paul fight. I'm sure in the coming weeks we will get more and more updates as the new year begins. But in terms of pop culture, you already know, top 10 new things in pop culture. We do it every single episode. And I was thinking that we will get back to our NBA and NHL weekly lookouts once the NFL season has come to an end. Because once the NFL season comes to an end, that's kind of when we get into the final stretch for NBA and NHL. Because I actually got NBA 2K25 for Christmas. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. I'm going to check it out. And I don't recognize a lot of the players. Like Scottie Pippen's son is in the NBA. How did I not know that? But that's for another time. In terms of pop culture, first off, on the docket, number one, 15 years ago, Disney officially acquired Marvel for $4 billion. It is now worth more than $50 billion. That is insane. It's incredible what they've done with it. I just can't think of, it's incomprehensible to me, all the rich people who got even more rich off of this deal. You know, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. I have to get in the upper percent, but I will use my powers for good. Trust me, trust me, trust me. Here's a fun little thing. Number two, choose one 2024 comic book movie / TV show from each row to keep. The others will be deleted. Alrighty, first up we have The Boys, X-Men 97, Echo, and Joker Folle à Deux. Okay, The Boys, I'm easily keeping. You know, X-Men 97, I've heard great things about, but it's just not my animated show that I'm going to be watching. Echo, starring Vincent D'Onofrio, kind of followed the, what was it, the deaf chick in the Marvel Universe. No interest in that. And then Joker 2, I heard it absolutely sucked, and I wasn't really too high on the first one. First one was just kind of mediocre to me personally, which might be a controversial opinion. That's just how I view it. So we're keeping The Boys there because I love The Boys. Season 5, oh my gosh, can't wait for that. Row 2, we have Agatha All Along, Deadpool and Wolverine, Batman Caped Crusader, and Venom The Last Dance. Is it really The Last Dance? Oh my gosh, The Last Dance. That's what they called the 97-98 Bulls documentary, if I can recall. Agatha All Along, I don't like witches, so did not watch that. Deadpool and Wolverine, we're going to talk about that later. Fantastic movie. Easily keeping that from this row. Look, the Venom movies, they've all been mediocre. They've all been 6 out of 10, 5 out of 10, maybe a 7 out of 10 movies. That's all we got there. Batman Caped Crusader, similar to X-Men 97. I've heard good things. I just don't watch animated shows. And the final little row we have here, Madam Web, Kraven the Hunter, Creature Commandos, and Invincible. It's not even a competition. I'm easily choosing Invincible. Invincible, Deadpool, Wolverine, and The Boys, some of the better comic book stuff that I've seen this upcoming year. I mean, Madam Web and Kraven the Hunter are regarded as two of the worst movies ever made, and Creature Commando I've heard mixed reviews on. Number three coming into this one. Dune Part 2 is now streaming on Netflix, interestingly enough, with news of Dune Messiah beginning filming. I'm excited for that movie in 2026. Dune Part 2 was such a fantastic viewing experience. It just gets two thumbs up from me personally. Number four, Bill Skarsgård says he would be interested in playing the Joker. There's a pretty cool Joker in me, and it would be very sick to bring out, says Bill. Bill Skarsgård loves bringing characters to life. You know, he was just Nosferatu, I think it is, which is, I think, a vampire or something. I actually kind of want to see that movie. It looks kind of good. He's also been It, Pennywise the Clown in It, and he's a pretty good actor for everything I've seen, so I think he would play a phenomenal, phenomenal Joker. Number five, major TV shows that will be releasing in 2025. Some of them are You Season 5. I cannot wait to see the conclusion of the Joel Goldberg series. I might have to go back and rewatch all of that. Andor Season 2, you know, I know a lot of Star Wars fans love that. Ironheart, no interest in that. Alien Earth, I'm somewhat curious. I'm not fully invested, but I am somewhat curious by that. Spider-Noir, which I believe Nicolas Cage is the voice of Spider-Noir. I don't know if that's true. The Bear Season 4, that's a good show I've heard I should watch. Invincible Season 3, thank you. Thank you. It's about time we get another Invincible season. Wonder Man, might check that out. Chad Powers starring, oh my gosh, who was in Twisters? Oh my gosh, he was in Twisters. Anyone But You. He was in Top Gun Maverick. Glenn Powell. Glenn Powell will be starring in Chad Powers. Severance Season 2 about rich family. Wednesday Season 2, about time they came out with that. Peacemaker Season 2. Squid Game Season 3. Oh my gosh, fantastic stuff there. They're making a Season 8 of Rick and Morty. Wow. Holy cow. Percy Jackson Season 2. The Last of Us Season 2, thankfully. Stranger Things Season 5, the finale. Cannot wait for that. Dexter Resurrection, you already know it. Welcome to Derry. Weird. I just mentioned it, and I didn't even know they were coming out with a series. That's creepy. Any others? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is a Game of Thrones-inspired series. So 2025 has a lot of exciting series coming to us all. Number six, Jason Momoa has been officially cast as Lobo in Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow in theaters June 26, 2026. All I could describe of Lobo is if you go and look at the cover for the album that has the song Dragula, is exactly what Lobo looks like. So I guess he's playing a villain? I don't know. Jason Momoa, best of luck to him. Number seven, Charlie Cox has reportedly been training to return as Daredevil for Avengers Doomsday, according to the gym he's been training at. Well, that's funny. Charlie Cox showing up, trying to get a pump in. Everyone at the gym's reporting back to the, the Daily Reporter, Hollywood Reviewer, whatever you want to call it. He's actually going to be training for Avengers Doomsday. Little do you know, Charlie Cox just likes to get a good pump in now and then. Number seven, major movies having anniversaries in 2025. Heat is having its 30th anniversary. That was a fantastic movie. It had Robert De Niro. It had Al Capone. Al Pacino. Yes, Al Pacino. Fantastic movie. What else we got? Jaws having its 50th anniversary. Creed is having its 10th anniversary. Wow, 10 years since the first Creed movie came out. That's weird to think about. Seven is having its 30th anniversary. Sicario turns 10 years old. Got a whole bunch of movies. They have a wide, wide list. Avengers Age of Ultron turns 10 years old. How to Train Your Dragon turns 15 years old. I feel so old, I'm done looking at this. That is actually insane. Number seven, Apple TV Plus will be available for free this weekend only. What? How did I not know about that? Guess I got to everyone log into Apple TV Plus. I guess we're all going to be watching that. Interesting. Love that. Number eight, Blade Runner 2099, starring Hunter Schafer and Michael Yeoh, has wrapped filming, coming soon to Prime Video. They're going to try and recapture how good Blade Runner 2049 was. Oh my gosh, that was such a good movie. Is it 2047? I can't remember. Whatever the Blade Runner with Gosling was, that was fantastic. Number nine, Sonic 3 has passed $200 million worldwide. Wow. Wow, that's a very successful film franchise, and I believe they're already in plans to make a fourth one. You know, I guess Sonic is an absolute hit, so good job to Sega for the little video game character. They made up, whatever you want to phrase it as. But yes, the final thing we have, number 10, former President Jimmy Carter has passed away at the age of 100 the other day. Just incredible. Just absolutely incredible. Incredible to think Jimmy Carter was around for 100 years and was able to see so much. One of the better presidents that I've heard of, so that's good to hear. But, you know, I never really trust all the people that get into power. You know, you can't be a good person and be in power nowadays. It's a random, it's a anomaly, I think is the better wording I was looking for. But those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. Lots of fun stuff all around, no matter which way you spin it. I'll tell you what else is fun, and that is we are looking at my top 10 favorite new movies I saw in order. I ranked them. I saw a lot of new movies this year, but these are my top 10. I do want to point out, I didn't see a lot of good ones. I haven't seen Gladiator 2. There's going to be a lot of others that you might think of that aren't on this list. These are just the ones I saw. Not in general, but the ones I saw. Remember, I'm a 22-year-old boy. Okay, I have my own opinions. I know I'm maybe not be politically correct with my choices, but this is my personal preference. So here we go, the top 10 new movies I saw in 2024 ranked. Kicking off our list at number 10 is A Quiet Place Day One. This movie was all right. Okay, that's what I'll say. It was all right. I did see this in the theaters with Lexi. Came out in June. Might have seen it in July, I believe. Obviously written by John Krasinski, directed by Michael Sarnowski. Stars, oh my gosh, what are their names? Lupita Nyong'o and Joseph Quinn are the two stars in the film. Actually, Alex Wolff and Digimon Hunsu also in it. You would recognize all of their faces. Pretty good. Pretty good film overall. The only issue is it doesn't further the storyline. It gives you just a tad bit more of lore in the Quiet Place universe. And it's a prequel. It's a prequel to a series that did not need a prequel. It needed more sequels. But, I mean, it was good enough. I was really struggling to find 10 new movies I found. And out of the ones I kicked off the list, this one deserved to be on it. I left the theater kind of just feeling like, okay, one main character lives, one main character probably dies, and I'm not any change the wiser. So, Quiet Place Day One coming in at number 10. At number 9 on my list of the top 10 new movies I saw that came out in 2024 is Long Legs. And Long Legs is one of the scarier... I don't watch a lot of horror movies, okay? I don't watch a lot of horror movies. This is also kind of a crime movie. But the my main issue with this, first off, I do want to say that the cast, Nicolas Cage as Long Legs, Micah Monroe as the main detective, both phenomenal. Both phenomenal, but the main plot twist, so we're getting so much buildup. You know, Act 1, Act 2, phenomenal. Act 3, it falls off so badly. The plot twist is so dumb, and spoiler alert for any of these movies if I say spoilers, the plot twist is that basically Nicolas Cage is using the devil to put spirits into dolls, and he brings the dolls in the house, and the spirit causes the father to kill everyone. It is the dumbest plot twist I've seen in a horror movie. It comes in at number 9 just because the first two acts are just so good. It's so chilling, it's so spine-tingling, and you have no idea what's going to happen, and then the plot twist is that the main character's mom has been the one doing it. It didn't make sense, but it was still good enough, and I watch a lot of horror movies, so this one's going to be coming in at number 9, and I'm trying to think, it came out in July, but I actually think I watched it on a streaming service, I want to say in October. I think it was October to make it even more spooky, and I had a dream that I had been watching it, but I came back and I was like, I'd never seen it before, and I went and watched it at like 7 in the morning. It was a very weird circumstance. Number 8, Godzilla Times Kong, The New Empire. And I'm such a fan of the MonsterVerse franchise. I love all of the movies. But I will say the one unfortunate thing is they've completely embraced that these are CGI monsters and like they don't need logic anymore. Like I kind of understand with Godzilla and with Kong Skull Island, to an extent, they had some logic. They had some logic with the monsters. But then King of the Monsters comes out, then even more with Godzilla versus Kong. And now we have Godzilla times Kong, The New Empire, and they just throw just all logic out the movie. But I mean, overall, wasn't too bad. Obviously, Rebecca Hall was in this one. Brian Tyree Henry. Was it Kyle Chandler? Julian Dennison. Good cast overall. Even had Lance Reddick in it. Wow, I didn't even realize that. And it sets up another movie. This one was really more Kong-focused. I think the next one's going to be more Godzilla-focused. But overall, nothing too much to complain about. This came out in March. I went with my boy Josh to see it. And I will say the theater experience with these movies is what makes it really fun. I know people are saying like movie theaters are dying. I don't think so, you know. I'll say watching a movie like Long Legs in the theater might have been really creeping me out. Watching A Quiet Place Day One in the theater was kind of not the best. But, you know, watching a movie like Godzilla Times Kong, The New Empire in a theater definitely makes it worth it. So, Adam Wingard, great job directing this one. I'm very curious to see what the next one will be, but I'm confident in this franchise. It's embraced the goofiness. Number 7, The Beekeeper. My parents recommended me to watch this. I believe it's on Amazon Prime, I want to say. You can watch this movie. And this is your stereotypical Jason Statham killing people. And in this case, he's this former CIA, KGB, I don't even know what you want to call him, operative who's living a life as a beekeeper. And then you find out that his lovely neighbor, who he always checks on, she ended up committing suicide because she lost over millions of people's financial funds because she had been hacked. What does Jason Statham do? He walks into a building, he blows up the whole building, and then everyone comes after him. And one thing I love about this movie, one thing I love is the plot twist about who the villain is the son of is so good. It's so good because it's like such an unnecessary good plot twist. You're like, this is absolutely fantastic. Obviously, this is pretty similar to Godzilla Times Kong The New Empire, except that Jason Statham is basically invincible. Bullets don't hit him. When he gets shot, he dives off a cliff. He lives. But it's so good. And they're making a second one. They're making a second one, which I am so thrilled about. Also had Josh Hutcherson in this one as a very good villain. That was pretty refreshing to see Josh Hutcherson, you know, PETA from Hunger Games, being in this film, being a dirty villain who you actually despise. Good work to him as an actor. And you know what? For a number seven movie, for a movie that had little to no marketing, and my parents recommended me to watch it, they've watched it like three times. They love this movie. It was pretty good. Number six, this one really surprised me. Alien Romulus. Now, this is super controversial. I think this may be my favorite Alien film. I'm pretty sure this is my favorite Alien film. It was so freaking good. I watched it with Lexi on, actually, it wasn't too long ago, but a month ago on Hulu. But this did come out to theaters in August. Quick theatrical run, did pretty decent. And for a two-hour movie, good pacing for a predictable plot where it's like, okay, you're probably only going to see one or two people survive. It worked really well, and you kind of have the same thing over and over, the androids living through everything. You have the girl making it through to the end, but it was really good, and the monster at the end was so freaking, you really never knew it was going to happen, and you actually... you know, obviously the aliens are the villains, but you create a human villain with, I'm trying to think who it was, it might have been Spike Farron, his name is. I think he played the little annoying villain in this film, but Kaylee Spani does fantastic in this. You had Robert Bobrovsky, who is a 7'7" NBA player. He was starring in this film as a, gosh, I don't even know what you want to call it, as this alien-type creature. It was so fun. It was so fun, and when it ended, I felt fulfilled. I was like, this was a good Alien movie overall, and it really gives me hope that they can continue to make Alien movies nowadays, and they can still be good. So, as long as you add in surprise elements like Robert Bobrovsky being this human hybrid or whatever, I think it'll do numbers. Numbers at the box office. And hey, it's number seven on the list of top movies for 2024. And by the way, we're missing a lot of good ones this year. Number five, halfway through, my most recent movie I have watched, Juror Number Two. I was so surprised by this film. Stars Nicholas Hoult in this movie. You also have Zoe Dutch playing. I believe Zoe Dutch is the wife, I want to say, in this. Toni Collette is a prosecutor. Gabriel Brasso. Kiefer Sutherland was in this movie. Always love seeing him. Cedric Yarbrough. J.K. Simmons. A lot of fun people in this film. It is a thriller drama directed by none other than Clint Eastwood. And the entire premise of this movie is that Nicholas Hoult's character is brought in for jury duty, and he finds out that the woman that was killed in the case, trial, whatever, he had accidentally hit driving home from a bar. He wasn't drunk. He didn't do it intentionally, but he basically hides it. Okay, and due to evidence, due to a whole bunch of things, at the end of the movie, the prosecutor finally realizes that it was him that did it. And the ending, you know, you're always wondering, is he going to get away with it? Is he going to get away with it? And in the end, he chose to prosecute and send the man to jail instead of confessing it up. And the movie ends on a cliffhanger with the prosecutor showing up to his house after he said she should walk away. And it kind of leaves you thinking that he's going to get caught. But I mean, it's almost a two-hour movie. It is kind of a slower pace. It's on HBO Max, just came out. But I will say, it surprised me. It surprised me. I watched it in the car ride back home from Chicago, Christmas I had with my family. And I'm watching it, and it was really good. And you kept wondering if people are going to catch on. And then it's like he's trying to prove that the guy isn't guilty because he knows he is. Very good. And the cast, very Samble cast. I was an ensemble cast. I don't know what my grammar's doing there, but good movie. Getting into this, number four, Carry On. This movie, holy cow, people are calling it the new Die Hard. It just might be. Came out December 13th. Okay, this movie came out, 18 days ago or something? This was fantastic. I know some people are saying this is dumb. There's a lot of plot holes. That's the movie business. That's Hollywood. But Taron Egerton plays this TSA airport worker when Jason Bateman, who is this ruthless villain who you actually don't like, Jason Bateman, kudos to you for playing a villain, comes through, basically says, we need to get this package through. We need to, you know, get this through. And he's like, what is this? And it's this huge bomb. And then you find out it actually is this bomb that releases toxic gas and is this criminal network. I'm trying to think who else are some of the actors who play the criminals. No one that I really recognize. But you have Dean Norris starring in this film. You have Sophia Carson. She plays Taron Egerton's wife in the movie, or girlfriend, if you will. Very good overall. The plot twist, you know, I get it was a big plot twist. I guess it was that the president was going to be on the plane or something, or like some congresswoman. But it was really just more like, what's going to happen? They really keep you guessing. They kill characters unexpectedly. It has a fulfilling ending. And they really do some shocking things in it. This could be the new Die Hard. It certainly is shot in a more modern filmmaking sense. You know, Die Hard kind of older, if you will. This one, very good. And I was surprised. I was surprised. You can watch it on Netflix. It is a thriller action movie, and it gets 2 thumbs up. I think we gave it an 8 out of 10, 8.3 or something when I graded it. Very good. I actually probably bumped that up to an 8.6 after pondering on it. We'll definitely watch again. Good stuff. Alrighty, let's get into the top 3 movies I saw in 2024, and this was tough. This was tough between my 2 and the 3, but it did come down to personal preference of the movie franchises. But I think if I wasn't such a big fan of the franchise for number 2, this would be my number 2 movie of the year. It is easily the best comic book movie, best Marvel movie, best superhero movie of the year. I'm sure you can already guess, it's Deadpool and Wolverine. I am yet to watch it again. Okay, but that theater experience, I was laughing so hard. The music had me hype. The characters, this is how you properly do cameos in a movie, okay? Okay, Multiverse of Madness, goodness me. This was fantastic. Deadpool, Wolverine. Can I even remember the plot? I honestly can't even remember the plot of the movie, but it's just Deadpool Wolverine going on a mission to do something, and it's so entertaining. The chemistry that Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds half is fantastic. You have Channing Tatum in it. You have Chris Evans in it. You have Wesley Snipes appearing in it. You have Jennifer Garner in it. You have Daphne Keane in it. There are so many cameos. It's utterly insane. It's fantastic. The score for this movie is amazing. All the action, everything. This is truly, truly a fantastic movie. Only a 78% on Rotten Tomatoes. Fan score, gotta have this at 100%. Gotta have it. And, you know, this was a $200 million budget. They made over a billion. You already know they made over a billion to this. Came out in July. Saw it with Lexi in the theater. It was great. It was great. It's one of those movies where I almost, like, don't know if I want to watch it again. I don't think it's going to be re-ruined. Because, you know, some movies you watch it again, you're like, oh, it wasn't as good as the first time. This one, I feel like it will be as good as the first time. They're already in talks to make another one, all right? They really want to, with how successful this one was and how fun everyone had watching it. Deadpool Wolverine, my number 3 movie of 2024. With that, the number 2 movie I saw, and like I said, this comes down to personal preference, number 2, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. If no one knows, Planet of the Apes, my favorite trilogy of all time. Like, I put this trilogy ahead of The Hobbit, ahead of Lord of the Rings. I'm a huge Planet of the Apes guy, okay? This movie, 2 hours and 25 minutes, came out in May, saw it at the theater. This was phenomenal. This was phenomenal. The world building, it's truly, these are CGI'd apes. These are CGI'd apes, and they look just as real as could get. It starts off, I will say, a bit slow, okay? It really builds, but the good thing about this movie is it builds into its climax. But the world building is phenomenal. We set up so many more sequels. They're planning to make another trilogy with this. And I am very hopeful for the future of this franchise. And I'm yet to rewatch it, unfortunately, just because I don't have Hulu right now. It's actually on Disney Plus, which I don't have. So I have none of the services that's on right now. But Wes Ball, phenomenal job directing this. And the villain is so good, you almost don't want him to die. I'm kind of hoping they didn't kill the villain. I hope they've used some Hollywood plot holes to make him come back to life, because he was so freaking good in this. The cast, just want to say Freya Allen is phenomenal as May in this. She's going to be the lead, I think, when it comes to the humans for the next film. Kevin Durant as Proximus Caesar, the villain, so good. So good. He speaks so well as an ape. Obviously, Owen Teague, Peter McCann, Lydia Peckman, Dykan Lachman, so many great actors, actresses portraying these apes. You even have William H. Macy playing a human in this film who ends up getting killed, which is super hilarious. But Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, it was so fun. The graphics were phenomenal. Nothing looked CGI. It all looked so realistic. You have no idea what they're building up to. Then you get to the end and you don't even know what they're building up to. The final fight is phenomenal. It is beautiful all around. And honestly, the ending leaves you wanting so much more. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, my number 2 movie of the year. But Number one, you know, that we're going to talk about the MMA awards in a second, and it's just one of those things where you don't want to go with the crowd. I hate going with the crowd when it comes to predictions and rankings and stuff and, you know, results, but Dune Part 2, you can't deny it at all. It's the best movie of the year. It has to be the best movie of the year, at least the one I saw. At least the one I saw. I mean, it has a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, and for anyone like myself who saw the first one and was like, this movie was boring. This was so, I couldn't even finish it the first time. It was so boring. This one did it so much justice. I went back and watched the first one again and was in love with the first one. The world building here, I truly tell you, is phenomenal. Okay, I don't think I'm going to read the books, but in terms of these two movies, phenomenal. And well, this movie made Timothée Chalamet a star. I already know Timothée Chalamet was a star, but this one really elevated him. You also have Zendaya as the love interest. Their chemistry is phenomenal. Austin Butler as Fade Rotha as the villain. One of the best villain performances. Might be the best villain of the year. Holy cow. Florence Pugh is in this. Rebecca Ferguson, Stellan Skarsgård as Baron Vladimir. Oh my gosh. You also have a Javier Bardem back in this one. Christopher Walken plays the Emperor. He's literally a dead man walking. It's so funny. Dave Bautista's in this one, getting killed by Josh Brolin. Absolutely love that. Stephen McKinley's in this. Charlotte Rampling. This is phenomenal. I mean, David Dasmalchian, Babs Al-Cosmi, and Tim Blake Nelson. I can go on listing all these actors, and if you look up the cast, you will recognize all of them. This is phenomenal. And this movie did so good. This was supposed to be the conclusion. It was just supposed to be a part one and part two. They're making a third Dune movie, Dune Messiah, to complete a trilogy. And the arc of Paul Atreides is so good in this film. So good. He goes from not knowing anything. He goes from just being this son of a king, son of a leader, to out in the desert with these people he doesn't know, and they begin to worship him. They begin to call him the Moya. Oh my gosh, what is his name, guys? What is his name? Moya Deeb. They begin to call like their leader something. Oh my gosh, I can't think of the word. It's really troubling. Gosh, I've actually shown it in theaters somewhere. What the heck? Or it's on HBO or TV, I don't know. But I mean, and you see him slowly gaining more people. And the final battle scene with the sandworms. Oh, it is so good. It's so good. And the knife scene. The knife scene, you know. I'm talking about Kingdom of Planet of the Apes. You had the final fight between, oh my gosh, what was the, I can't remember the name, Proxima Caesar. And I honestly, Owen Teague's character, I can't remember the main character's name. Was it Caesar? Noah. Between Noah and Proxima Caesar was phenomenal. Austin Butler and Timothée Chalamet and their knife fight in the end, it was so good. It was so good. It's one of those things where you honestly don't know what's going to happen. I honestly thought they might kill Timothée Chalamet's character. They did such a good job building it up. Dune Part 2 is just fantastic, fantastic. And it ends. It ends with Timothy choosing to become the Emperor of the Galaxy instead of choosing Zendaya. Wow. Well, truly, some men, they can give up a woman for power. Clearly, Timothée Chalamet is one of those people. But those are my top 10 new movies I saw in 2024. It was a good time. Good time movie-wise. Better than 2023. I'm going to go out and say it. I had a much better movie experience in 2024 than 2023. Let me actually see if I can re-find. I don't know if I have it. I have one big notebook where I take all my notes for the podcast. Let me see if I put my past year in here. I'd be very curious to see if I had that. That was ranking trilogies. Ranking classes. Oh, I should do that again. I should rank all the classes I've taken in college. That was fun when I did that. Episode 53 was the final one we did last year. Funny enough, I never realized that. I don't know if I actually have my 2023 movie rankings. Do I actually found it? All right, this was my last year's movie rankings. Number 10, Ant-Man Quantumania. That movie sucks. Super Mario Bros. Movie, surprisingly good. Transformers Rise of the Beast, it was all right. Jesus Revolution, that was surprisingly good. Oppenheimer came out last year. I completely forgot about that. Sound of Freedom, The Iron Claw, Guardians of the Galaxy Vol. 3, Barbie, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So actually, 2023 is pretty good. But yeah, I'm going to keep it $1.50. 2024 was phenomenal. So that's all we got for our top 10 new movies we saw in 2024. 4. I'm excited for next year. I'm excited for all the movies that are going to be coming out in the future. And yeah, Dune Part 2, Kingdom Planet of the Apes, Deadpool, and Wolverine, my top 3 movies of the year. And even if I had seen more, I think those 3 would have landed in my top 3. But that's all we got for movies. The rest of the podcast, well, I'll tell you what we do got to talk about. And that was all the action in week 17 of the NFL season. We are down to the final week next week. We will be dropping our predictions for that coming up. But let me just tell you, week 17 did not disappoint. Let's go through all 16 games. I just want to let you know, I went 15 and out of 16 on predictions, and I still did not win an intermittent t-shirt. Some guy beat me out on the tie-breaking score. Unreal. Blasphemy if you ask me. Let's take a look at all the action. I completely forgot about this, but Week 17 actually kicked off on Christmas Day with the Chiefs and the Steelers. Chiefs winning 29-10. Steelers looking just abysmal compared to what they were at the start of the season. Patrick Mahomes, 26 fantasy points. Xavier Worthy, 22.9. And Travis Kelce, 22.4. Biggest fantasy scores for the Steelers. Wilson had 17.7. Jalen Warren had 16.2. And Pat Freiermuth had 11. That was about as good as it got for the Steelers. I mean, just another typical Chiefs win, run of the mill, as expected. And I mean, it was never really close the entire game. Patrick Mahomes, 320 yards, 3 touchdowns, looking like prime Patrick Mahomes. Running wise, Kareem Hunt actually led the backfield. He got a touchdown on the ground. Pacheco, 6 carries, only 18 yards. Kelce, 8 catches, 84 yards, and a tutty. Xavier Worthy, 8 catches, 79 yards, and a tutty. And what's his name? Justin Watson, 2 catches, one of which was a touchdown. So good stuff for the Chiefs, you know, as expected, sadly. Steelers, 205 yards for Wilson and a pick. Najee rushed for 74. Warren rushed for 71. It was actually Russell who ran for 55 yards. Good for him, one of which was a touchdown. It was the lone touchdown for the team. Freiermuth, 7 catches, 60 yards. The only good man in the backfield. I mean, I don't know what more to say, guys. Chiefs 15-1, 6-game win streak. They're just dominant. 8-0 at home right now. I can't recall if they're home for their final game. No, they're on the road versus the Broncos. A must-win game for the Broncos, I might add. Well, it's not really a must-win game for the Chiefs, so I'll be interested to see what happens. Chiefs, absolutely phenomenal. Plus 97-point differential, almost at plus 100. For the Steelers, I mean, it all comes down. You know, if they win and the Ravens lose, I'm pretty sure they win the AFC North. So the Steelers are going to need to win their game against, I want to say it's the Bengals, and the Ravens need to lose their game to the Browns. So most, more than likely, Ravens are going to win the AFC North. Steelers, it's been a 3-game losing streak. You know, at one point they were 10-3. Those days are long gone. Speaking of the AFC North, Ravens and Texans was the second game on Christmas Day, and it was worse than the Chiefs and Steelers game. Ravens win 31-2. That's right. The Texans couldn't even get a score with their offense. The only score came from the defense getting a damn safety. Lamar, 29.42 fantasy points. Just ridiculous. Just utterly ridiculous. Henry goes for 24.5, and Mark Andrews, 14.8. There we go, Mark. Catch a little fire as the season winds to an end. For the Texans, Joe Mechie III, 9.8 fantasy points. Nico Collins, 8.9. C.J. Stroud, 6.1. Baltimore D also had 14, and Zay Flowers had 5 fantasy points. We need more, Zay. We need more fantasy points from you. Lamar, 10 for 15, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns. Him and Josh Allen. It's going to be close. I'm giving Josh Allen the MVP, but Lamar having another excellent year. Derrick Henry, 147 yards and a touchdown. Lamar rushed for 87 yards and a touchdown. Incredible. Mark Andrews, 2 catches, 68 yards, one of which was a touchdown. Likely had 1 catch for a touchdown. Zay, 2 catches, 31 yards. Damn it, Zay, I need more fantasy points from you. I'm in the championship in 2 leagues, and it's going to be close. For the Texans, C.J. Stroud, 185 yards and a pick. Joe Mixon held the 26 yards rushing. I mean, Everyone was locked down. Nico, 3 catches, 59 yards. It just was not enough. Thankfully for the Texans, their division absolutely sucks. You know, they're 9-7, clinched it a while ago. No one even came close to touching them. The Colts are going to finish minimum a game, maybe 2 games behind them. I mean, it's been pretty rough. And honestly, the Texans are going to be your 4th seed. Undoubtedly, you're going to be the 4th seed in the playoffs, and they will be graced with either playing the Ravens or the Steelers, more than likely the Steelers, so I think it's going to be a first-round exit for the Texans. As for the Ravens, I mean, 483 points for, they need 18 points, actually 17, to get to 500 points for on the year. I don't know if anyone, the Bills have gotten it. Have the Lions? Bills, the Lions have gotten it, so the Ravens are looking to join the club. But hey, you know what? Ravens need a win against the Browns. I'm sure they will get it. They dominated the Texans. You're just, I mean, it's a Christmas day. I want some action. This was on in the background. Everyone's like, this is just a waste. Waste of watching. Nothing exciting happened. Keeping the trend going, we head to Thursday Night Football as the Seahawks took on the Bears. And I mean, the Bears suck. The Bears outright suck, and they're going to need a whole new coaching staff. They have terrible clock management. It is awful. It is just plain awful. Seahawks win 6-3, and I won't lie. Seahawks offense was humble. Jackson Smith and Jigbo, only 6 fantasy points. Seahawks defense had 16. Zach Charbonnet, 10. Geno Smith, 8. That was about as good as it was getting. For the Bears, DJ Moore, 12. DeAndre Swift, 12. Chicago D, 11. I mean, this was a defensive battle in Chicago, and just they just couldn't do anything. They couldn't do anything, and it was boring to watch. It was boring to watch, and yet again, another failed time management to end the game for the Bears. Geno, 160 yards, just kind of held in check. Charbonnet, 57. McIntosh, running back, 46. Jack Smith and Jigba, 3 catches, 32 yards. Just couldn't really get anything done. DK Metcalf, 3 catches, 42 yards. Similar stuff with him. Tyler Lockett, 3 catches, 20 yards. Everyone got 3 catches. Noah Fant, 4 catches, 43 yards. I mean, Seahawks scrape away with a win. Much needed win, but at the same time, they aren't going to go to the playoffs. So does it really matter? Does it really matter in the end? I don't think so. For the Bears, Caleb Williams, 122 yards and a pick. Yikes. DeAndre Swift, 53 yards. Williams rushed for 37 yards. DJ Moore, 6 catches, 54 yards. Keenan Allen, 5 catches, 25. Romo Dunze, 1 catch. DeAndre Swift caught a couple little floaters to the backfield. Nothing. Absolutely nothing was going. But, I mean, Bears, 4-12, 10-game losing streak. They're 0-7 on the road. Couldn't win a single road game all year. We'll see if they can win in Green Bay to end the year. Doubt it. And, yeah, just rough. Just a rough year for the Bears. Nothing improved. And it's crazy to think they were 4-2 at one point and didn't win a single game, after that. Just tale of two sides. In the NFC North, I'll tell you, 3 teams succeeding, 1 team failing miserably. Seahawks, man, 9-7 plus 2-point differential. They're probably going to go out, play hard, final game of the year, but it's weird. It's weird to think that they're just not going to be in the playoffs, and they could finish with a 10-7 record. All right, they can play the Rams, though, send the Rams into the playoffs with some negative momentum, which I'm sure they're really going to be searching for. But other than that, you know, Seahawks, decent year. It's if the Seahawks would be a playoff team if the Commanders and the Packers weren't just so damn good, and the Vikings and Lions. I mean, what are the odds you have 2-14-2 teams in the same division? That's crazy. But boring Thursday Night Football game. Kind of a sad way to end Thursday Night Football games with that. Kind of sucks, but hey, it is what it is. We then got a little Saturday football action, and we kick things off. And nothing's better. Yet again, another doozy non-Sunday football game. Chargers taking on the Patriots, and look, I knew the Chargers would win, but why did Ladd McConkey have to go absolutely crazy? Chargers win 40-7. Just an absolutely outstanding performance from this Chargers team, and they clinch a playoff spot with this win. Ladd McConkey, 29 fantasy points. Justin Herbert, 24. And Cameron Dicker, 17. Damn, Cameron Dicker, he has been doing a phenomenal job this season as the Chargers' main kicker. For the Pats, DeMario Douglas, 14. Drake May, 9.88. And K-Boat, 6.8. Yeah, it was rough. Patriots got a touchdown against the Chargers early on, so it was 7-7. And then nothing else happened. Literally nothing else happened. Herbert, 281 yards, 3 touchdowns. Banger. J.K. Dobbins in his return game, 76 yards and a touchdown, looking ready for the playoffs. I mean, I do also want to add that you also had Hassan Haskins run the ball. Was it Cameron Vidal, Justin Herbert, Taylor Heineke, and Davis, the wide receiver running. They had a lot of people running the ball, and you know Harbaugh loves to run the ball. Yeah, that's not evident by his time at Michigan. Ladd McConkey, 8 catches, 94 yards, and 2 touchdowns, was the star for the Chargers. For the Pats, I mean, Drake May, 117 yards and a touchdown, did what he had to do. Antonio Gibson, 63 yards on the ground, took it over after Ramondre Stevenson went down. Douglas, 4 catches, 46 yards and a touchdown. is about as good as it gets. Hunter Henry, when it matters most, putting up 0 points with only one target. Yeah, not going to get it done. Chargers 10-6 will be most likely the sixth seed in the playoffs, if I'm looking at this correctly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's a crazy scenario where the Bengals or Dolphins can make the playoffs, so we'll have to see what happens. But Chargers most likely locked in at the 6, and it's looking like they're going to be matched up with the, I want to say, Ravens. So that'll prove for an interesting matchup, Harbaugh versus Harbaugh in the playoffs. Patriots looking like they're getting the number one pick, 3-13, 6-game losing streak. It's terrible. It's terrible in New England. They've given up 401 points, only scored 266. Have they become the worst offense in the league? No, they aren't the worst offense just yet, but hey, one more week to go. Finally, we had a good game on Saturday. Bengals and Broncos heads to overtime. Bengals survive 30-24, keeping their season hopes alive. Cinema. Great matchup. This is good football. This is good Saturday football. These are the games I want to see on Saturday when I'm watching a football game. And I mean, Marvin Mims Jr. for the Broncos, 30 fantasy points, really balling out. Bo Nix, 21. Cortland Sutton, 16.5. T. Higgins, 40 bomb for T. Higgins. Joe Burrow, 36.98. And Ja'Marr Chase, 19.2. Back and forth the entire game. This was phenomenal. Bo Nix, 219 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a pick. Was it Chase McLaughlin, 69 rushing yards? That was just about it. Nothing really done on them. It was done through the air, if you will. Marvin Mims, 8 catches, 103 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Sutton, 5 catches, 55 yards, and a touchdown. They were getting it done. He also had like 8 other guys catching passes. It was crazy. Joe Burrow, if his team was not sitting at 8-8, might be in the MVP conversation. 412 yards, 3 touchdowns, phenomenal. Phenomenal. Also rushed for 25 yards and a touchdown. He was not to be stopped. Chase Brown held the 67 yards, might have gotten injured too. T. Higgins, though, 11 catches, 131 yards, 3 touchdowns, dominated. Mike Gesicki, 10 catches, 86 yards. How about that? 18.6 fantasy points for Mike Gesicki. Ja'Marr Chase, 9 catches, 102 yards. It was a good day for the Bengals. And the scenario stands as of right now that the Bengals are going to need to win. They're going to need the Dolphins to lose, and they're going to need the Broncos to lose. Now, the Broncos do play the Chiefs, and I think even the Chiefs' backups could cook the Broncos starters. But in terms of the Dolphins, I believe they play the Jets, if I'm not mistaken. That's a super winnable game for them. They might be making the playoffs, actually. So Bengals are going to need a miracle. And I mean, 4-game win streak now. They turned it on when the season looked all but lost. And unfortunately, I don't think they're going to be able to recapture it. As for the Broncos, 9-7. They just need one win and they're in. If not, they're going to need the Dolphins and the Bengals both to lose. Crazy scenarios all around. I'll be very curious to see what happens. If Broncos lose, they're going to need to be some major Jets and Steelers fans. I'll tell you that for certain. Final game on Saturday, Rams and Cardinals, kind of boring. 13-9, Rams win, and they clinch the division. Clinch the NFC West. Cardinals finish 7-9. Trey McBride, actually, no, they still have one more game, but 7-9 before missing the playoffs. Trey McBride, 30.3 fantasy points. He went nuclear. Kyler Murray, 16. And Marvin Harrison Jr., 15.6. Puka Nacua, 22.9. Kyron Williams, 16. And the Rams defense, 12 fantasy points, locking down the Cardinals. Kyler Murray, 321 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. Michael Carter actually took over rushing duties with 70 yards. Trey McBride, 12 catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown. Phenomenal. Marvin Harrison Jr., 6 catches, 96 yards, was outstanding in this performance. Unfortunately, you know, overall, the team did not put it together in the end. Stafford, 189 yards, mediocre. Kyron, 56 yards and touchdown, decent. Puka, 10 catches, 129 yards. Cooper Kupp only had 1 catch. But Rams get it done. You know, we'll see if they can beat the Seahawks to end the season. I mean, it's been okay. They do have a minus 14 point differential. They are on a 5-game win streak, though, which is how they've been able to win the division. I'll be curious to see how they do in the playoffs. They're definitely going to be coming in as that number. It'll really depend. If the Buccaneers win, Buccaneers might actually, depending on what happens, Rams are either going to be the 4th or the 3rd seed, and I do not know if I like their odds in the playoffs. I'd be more scared to play the Buccaneers than the Rams in the playoffs, but you know what? Trey McBride did an outstanding job in that game. He's one of the better tight ends on the come up. He could be the best tight end next year if Brock Bowers didn't exist. Getting into Sunday football, Bills and Jets, one of our noon games. And let me just tell you, this Bills team, I cannot wait to watch them play in the playoffs. I am absolutely buzzing about it. 40-14, and it was 40 rip before finally the Jets got some garbage time touchdowns with Tyrod Taylor. Basically, the entire Rams third string was in the game at that point. This was a blowout. Blowout in insurmountable proportions. Bills 40-14 win. They finish 8-0 at home. Outstanding. If you're a Bills ticket holder, a season ticket holder, you got your money's worth. 509 points put up, 345 given up. They're good. They're really freaking good. For the Jets, Conklin, 21.7 fantasy points. Garrett Wilson, 17.6. And Tyrod Taylor, 13.92. Josh Allen, 22. Bills D, 15. Amari Cooper, 14.6. You had multiple Bills touchdowns in this game, okay? They were going crazy. Rodgers, 112 yards, two picks. I think Aaron Rodgers needs to retire. I don't even know if they're going to start him in the final game of the year. Breece Hall, held the 45 yards rushing. Wilson, 7 catches, 66 yards and a touchdown. Devontae Adams held the 5 catches for 47 yards. Rough time to be a Jets fan. For the Bills, Josh Allen, 182 yards, 2 touchdowns, 17 yards on the ground with a touchdown. Mitchell Trubisky came in and was just supposed to kind of end the game. 69-yard touchdown pass to Schaefer's, the wide receiver. How about that? Mitchell Trubisky coming in, looking like an absolute stud. James Cook, 53 yards, got a touchdown. Amari Cooper, 3 catches, 56 yards and a touchdown. Keon Coleman caught a touchdown. Everyone was catching freaking touchdowns. It's a good day to be a Buffalo Bills fan. Let me tell you that. The Bills taking so much momentum in. 3-game win streak, 13-3. One of the best offenses in the league. I'm so excited to see his team in the playoffs. Jets, 4-12, 2-game losing streak. I mean, I don't even know how you rebuild. I don't even know what you do from here. Everything is falling apart for the Jets. Everything is exploded in their faces. And it's kind of funny to see Aaron Rodgers not working out. Keep him away from Minnesota. We do not want him here at all. Little divisional action in the AFC South as the Jaguars beat the Titans. And you already know Brian Thomas Jr., 23.9 fantasy points. He's the number 4 wide receiver in fantasy football. Dude, I love Brian Thomas Jr. so much. So much. And I mean, this Jaguars team, it's rough. Minus 110 point differential. But at the same time, picking up wins here. 4-12, good for you. Titans 3-13, 5-game losing streak. It has been a rough year for the Titans. Calvin Ridley, 14 fantasy points. Tajay Spears, 13. Mason Rudolph, 12. Mac Jones dropped 17. Parker Washington, 12. But it was the Brian Thomas Jr. show all day. Tajay Spears took over the backfield from an injured Pollard, who was out for the game, 95 yards. I mean, there's nothing to even point out. Nothing went well. Mac Jones, though, I'll tell you what, coming into his own, finally realizing you just throw the ball to Brian Thomas Jr. 7 catches, 91 yards, and a touchdown. Even ran the ball once for 18 yards. How about that? A little run around. ETN, 49 yards rushing. Bigsby, 33. Mac Jones, 22 yards rushing. I can't even picture Mac running. That's funny to me. But yeah, good win overall for the Jaguars. Looking to end the season with some momentum and just get a couple crappy wins here and there. They play the Colts next time out, and I'll see that's a pretty winnable game, if you ask me. Buccaneers and Panthers was up next, and I mean, if you thought that the Bills blowout was bad, this Buccaneers game was insane. I mean, holy cow, Buccaneers, 48-14. Baker Mayfield went ballistic. 34.56 fantasy points. Mike Evans had 29. Jordan McMillan, 23. Thielen as well on the Panthers side, 28. Bryce Young had 16. Those two were going absolutely crazy. But Baker, just outstanding. Outstanding. Actually, we'll just talk about the Panthers real quick. Bryce, 203 yards and 2 touchdowns. Got it done. Only, and I repeat, only 39 rushing yards allowed from the Panthers. Just, locked down. Adam Thielen, 5 catches, 110 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's still got a thing or two left in him. But here we go. Baker Mayfield, 359 yards, 5 touchdowns, only 5 incompletions on 32 thrown balls. Incredible. Bucky Irving had 113 total rushing yards at the half and then did nothing in the second half. They just absolutely nothing. They ran the ball with Tucker. They ran the ball with Rashad White. They ran it with Johnson, the wide receiver. They ran it with McMillan, the wide receiver. They ran it with the backup quarterback, Trask. It was so goofy. So goofy and yet so fun at the same time. Mike Evans, 8 catches for 2 touchdowns and 97 yards. Bucky Irving had 4 catches for 77 yards. McMillan, 51 yards and 2 touchdowns. It was a great day. Great day for the Buccaneers. They're one win away from winning the NFC South and making the playoffs. They just need to make sure they win and the Falcons lose. Or actually, they just need to win. They just need a win and they're in, or else they're going to need a Falcons loss. But 9-7, good stuff. Panthers, 4-12. They've given up 496 points. They are the worst defense in professional football. Yeah, I don't know what to do with them. You know, Panthers, similar to the Jets, they were bad last year, and they're just as bad this year. Don't get much worse than that. Same for the Bears. Raiders and Saints in the next ball game, and Saints, man, what happened? Three-game losing streak. They at one point were in control of the division, and now they have zero control. Quite literally zero control. They're actually way out of the playoffs. They might get a top 10 draft pick. For the Raiders, I mean, you probably want draft position, but picking up big wins like this, they'll take it. 4-12 now. Amir Abdullah, 17 fantasy points. Aiden O'Connell, 17. Jacoby Myers, 17. And Brock Bowers, 14.6. Would like a bit more from you, Brock, but I'll take what I can get. Foster Moreau had 13 for the Saints. And Spencer Rattler had 13 as well. And even Juwan Jennings, he had 12.6. Good enough. Good enough, if you ask me. 25-10. Yeah. Just the Raiders show all day. Saints offense just wasn't having it. Aiden O'Connell, 242 yards, 2 touchdowns. Amir Abdullah, 115 yards. He was doing exceptional. Brock Bowers, 7 catches, 77 yards. A lucky, lucky man. Jacoby Myers caught a touchdown as well. Spencer Rattler, 218 yards, touchdown and 2 picks. Led the backfield in rushing, too. I mean, they ran the ball a total of 13 times the entire game. That's not good. With running backs, they only ran it 10 times. That's really bad. Nothing stands out. Nothing stands out for me. Saints, Raiders, done season. Nothing too much to say. Come back next year. Try hard. Brock Bowers is a stud for the Raiders. I don't know what to say for the Saints. I really don't know what to say about either of those teams. Next up, Eagles and Cowboys. And I mean, talk about just blowouts after blowouts. Eagles went 41-7. Just, oh my gosh. Eagles 13-3. They're going to be the number 2 seed in the NFC playoffs. I mean, they're great. They're good. Plus 153 point differential. Devontae Smith, 30 fantasy points. Philly, 20. And Saquon Barkley, 18.9. Tolbert for the Cowboys, the only player to get into double digits with 12 fantasy points. Yeah, Cowboys suck. Cowboys really suck. Cooper Rush, 147 yards, touchdown, 2 picks. Trey Lance came in, threw a 1-yard pass. How about that? Man actually rushed the ball for 1 yard. Good for him. Rico Dowdle, 104 yards on the ground. Brandon Cooks led the backfield. I mean, with no CeeDee Lamb, no Dak Prescott, this team really freaking sucks. Let me tell you, they are really bad. Really, really bad. Kenny Pickett taking over the backfield today. 143 yards and a touchdown. But then Tanner McKee comes in, 3 for 4, 54 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, come on. I mean, what are we going to do with the third-string quarterbacks out here throwing 2-plus touchdowns? Saquon rushes for 167 yards. Insane. Devontae Smith, 6 catches, 120 yards and 2 touchdowns. And A.J. Brown, 3 catches, one of which was a touchdown. Good stuff. For the Eagles, they will take this momentum into the final week. And I think they're going to try and get Saquon to the rushing record. I think he's 100 yards off, 101 or something. So hopefully they keep him in. He can get 10, maybe 18, maybe 35 fantasy points to help bring me to a championship. But we'll have to see. We'll really have to see. Cowboys, rough year, 7-9. Oof. Minus 114 point differential. That is really bad. I would expect nothing less, to be honest. Then we get into a game which was supposed to be for nothing. This game was supposed to be for naught. Like, nothing was on the line here. Giants hosting the Colts. And the Giants decide to choke the number one pick to the Patriots and go absolutely ballistic, win their first game at home in a 45-33 barn burner. I mean, where was this all year, Giants? Where was this all year? Just exploding out of nowhere. Colts 2, Jonathan Taylor 27.6 fantasy points, Pittman 25.9, Alec Pierce 24.2. They were balling, but I mean, Malik Nabers 36, Drew Lock 34, Vandal Robinson 18. It was insane to watch the Giants just going crazy. For the Colts, Anthony Richardson was out, so Joe Flacco was in, 330 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 picks. Jonathan Taylor, 125 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was the only man to run the ball in the backfield the entire game. Pittman, 9 catches, 109 yards and a touchdown. Alec Pierce, 6 catches, 122 yards and a touchdown. They were doing good, but I'll tell you who was doing better. That was the, at the time, 2-13 Giants. Now they're 13-3. How about it? Drew Lock, 309 yards, 4 touchdowns, ran for a touchdown. Passed 171 yards on 7 catches for 2 touchdowns. Two Malik Nabers. Robinson, 5 catches, 4 touchdowns. Darius Slayton, 1 catch, 1 touchdown. Absolutely insane performance for the Giants. I've said that over and over and over for all these teams, but I mean, it truly was It truly was a great performance for the Giants. They may have lost the number one pick, but they made their fans happy in their final home game of the year. For their opponent, the Colts, 7-9. Yeah, rough year for the Colts. I mean, if they could have won three of their last four, they'd have probably won the AFC South, and they just couldn't win a game. Couldn't win a game to save their life. So, Colts, pack it up, try again. Did deal with some injuries this season, but also just, they couldn't finish games for the life of them. Couldn't finish games. And when your defense is giving up 404 points, you're not going to get it done. Let me tell you that right now. AFC will stick with them. Dolphins visiting the Browns. Dolphins win 20-3. This is just the definition of the Browns offense is the worst offense in the league. I'm pretty sure it is. Browns have 248 points put up on the year. That is officially the worst in the AFC. Is 248 a league worst? It is a league worst by a lot. So Browns worst offense in the league. They lose 20-3. Huntley coming in. No Tua. No problem. 24 fantasy points. Tyreek Hill had 19. And Jonah Smith, 11. Jerry Jeudy had 21 fantasy points. That was it. It was like just Jerry Jeudy being good, and everyone else was just pretty average. Huntley, 225 yards and a touchdown. Ran for 7 times, 52 yards and a touchdown. Tyreek, 9 catches, 105 yards. And Jonu Smith caught the lone passing touchdown of the game. Good win for the Dolphins, keeping their season alive. They will need a win against the Jets next week and a Broncos loss to make the playoffs. 8-8 would be a miracle. Truly would be a miracle if they made the playoffs. Browns, I mean, gosh, is there anything good to say about the Browns? 3-13, 5-game losing streak. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, I don't even know how he's in the league. 170 yards and a pick. Foreman took over duties from Jerome Ford, who got injured. Jerry Jeudy, 12 catches, 94 yards. Like I said, the only bright spot for this team. Then we got to America's Game of the Week. Game of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, the Packers visiting the Vikings. And oh, this was so sweet. This was so sweet. Vikings domination. Of course, out of nowhere, the Packers rally in the final 5 minutes and make it a 2-point game. But, I mean, we all know Vikings dominated this game. It was incredible. 27-25. It was phenomenal. Phenomenal to watch. Romeo Doubs, 14.8. Jordan Love, 14. Josh Jacobs, 10. We locked them all down. Sam Darnold, 24 fantasy points. Jalen Naylor, 19. And Jordan Addison, 18.9. You already know, baby. Jordan Love, 185 yards and a touchdown. Jacobs ran for a touchdown. Emmanuel Wilson ran for a touchdown. Dobbs, 7 catches, 58 yards. That's just about it. Now for the Vikings, Sam Darnold, 377 yards, 3 touchdowns, only 1 pick. Aaron Jones, 47 yards. You know, we were doing this through the passing. Jefferson, 8 catches, 92 yards. Jordan Addison, 6 catches, 69 yards and a touchdown. Jalen Naylor, 5 catches, 81 yards and a touchdown. Keep it going. Tyler Hunt to TJ Hockenson, 5 catches, 68 yards. Aaron Jones, 4 catches, 30 yards. Cam Akers ran in a touchdown. I don't even know what to say anymore. We went ballistic. Vikings, are you kidding me? Insane. I mean, we have a plus 122 point differential. 9-game winning streak. We're on a 9-game winning streak. What in the world is going on? And it's true. If you haven't heard, we do play. We do play the Lions on Sunday Night Football, the final game of the 2024-2025 regular season, to win the NFC North. It felt so good to sweep the Packers this year, beat them here at home. It's just incredible. It is amazing to be a Vikings fan this season. We're winning the Super Bowl. This is our year. The Vikings are going all the way this year. And I don't know. I honestly don't care if we get the number one seed or not. I'm going to be honest. I do think the one disadvantage is playing on the road. I prefer if we didn't do that. But, I mean, overall, you know, we haven't done as good coming off of a bye. Our two losses this year were coming off of a bye. Okay, so I'm scared if we stop our momentum, it might kind of kill everything. But you know what? I'm still rooting. Still picking the Vikings to beat the Lions. It will be a barn burner. For the Packers, I mean, hey, you're going to be the 6th seed in the playoffs, maybe the 7th seed. I don't know. You're making the playoffs. Be happy. I could care less. Sunday Night Football ended in a fantastic game between the Falcons and the Commanders. Commanders winning 30-24 in overtime. Bijan, 24.8 fantasy points. Drake London, 17. And Kyle Pitts, 14. Top 3 performers for the Falcons. For the Commanders, Jaden Daniels, unfortunately, 31.780. So good. Zach Ertz, 25.2. And Zacchaeus, 23.3. Great performance from the Commanders. But, I mean, Penix did better. Penix did better than last week. 223 yards for the rookie. Touchdown and a pick. I don't know why Kirk is benched, but I guess, you know, That's just what happens. Bijan, 90 yards, ran in 2 touchdowns. Drake London, 7 catches, 106 yards. Cal Pitts, 4 catches, 44 yards, and a touchdown. Darrell Mooney, only 2 catches for 37 yards. Jaden Daniels, 227 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a pick. Also rushed for 127 yards. That is insane. Who is even the starting running back? Was it Robinson? He only rushed for 60. That's funny. Zacheaus, 8 catches, 85 yards and a touchdown. Zach Ertz, 6 catches, 2 of which were a touchdown. Scary Terry, only 1 catch for 5 yards. I don't even need their best wide receiver. I don't even need them. They're that damn freaking good. Commanders going to either be the 6th or 7th seed. I think they're going to be the 7th. I don't know. I think they are going to be the 7th. We'll have to see. Them and the Packers, it'll determine based on the ending of week 18. So, depending who wins and who loses, we'll see who is the 6th and the 7th seed. But good win for the Commanders, 4-game win streak. They're 38 points off of a 500-point season. For the Falcons, they will need to win to make the playoffs. And I think they're going to need the Buccaneers to lose. So they need a Bucs loss, and they need to win since they own the tiebreaker, I think. I don't know. We'll have to see. But wrapped everything up on Monday Night Football. Lions winning 40-34 over the 49ers. Didn't even watch it. I was busy watching Squid Games. I can't wait to review that. Squid Season 2 is out right now. But good win for the Lions. Tough play against the 49ers. They pulled it out. In the end, Jahmyr Gibbs, 26. Jared Goff, 25.8. Jameson Williams, 24.5. For the 49ers, Brock Purdy, 30.28. Why is it both quarterbacks I played put up 30 points? That's insane. Ricky Purcell had 28.7. George Kittle, 19.2. Good win. Good win all around for the Lions. But the 49ers offense did show up for this performance. Too little, too late, though. 6-10. 3-game losing streak. Rough stuff for the 49ers. Now, as for the biggest divisional rival the Vikings have at the moment, our opponent next week, the Lions, Jared Goff, 303 yards and 3 touchdowns, was doing phenomenal. Jameson Williams ran in a touchdown. Jahmyr Gibbs, 117 yards, ran in a touchdown. I don't think Montgomery was playing. Jameson, 5 catches, 77 yards, a touchdown. Amon-Ra, 8 catches, 60 yards, a touchdown. Sam Laporta, 6 catches, 64 yards, a touchdown. They have so many weapons, it's unfair. It's unfair. Why do they have so many dang weapons? It is pretty absurd. Pretty absurd, but I mean, for the 49ers, real quick, Ricky Purcell, absolute stud, 8 catches, 141 yards, and touchdown. Brock Purdy, 377 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, even ran in a touchdown. And you even had Josh Dobbs ran in a touchdown because Purdy had to come out. Crazy stuff, crazy, crazy stuff to end week 17. But yes, Lions, 14-2. We'll play them next week. I have it circled on the calendar. I'm going to be locked in. It is going to be a barn burner of a game. And I'm going to be very, very nervous. So much will change. It'll change if we can play. It'll change if we get a bye. But if we lose, I think we play we either could play the Rams or the Bucks, which is going to be really interesting. I'd actually prefer if the Falcons won and we ended up playing the Falcons at the 4 seed. Now, that would be cinema. You know what? I'm going to root for the Falcons to pull it together and get it done. But, yeah, that's all we got for the NFL. It was a good time. Good time watching it all. A lot of action, and the Vikings won. And whenever the Vikings win, I'm a happy camper. But that's all we got for that. Let's wrap up this episode with our 2024 end-of-the-year UFC awards for the entire year. Like I said, 8 categories to go through. And you know what? This was kind of tough. There's a lot of options to choose from. But honestly, I'm pretty confident in my predictions. So, not my predictions. What am I saying? In my awards that I've given out, let's go through all 8 categories. Kicking us off, we're going to start with our Rookie of the Year. Better yet, the Debut Fighter of the Year is more how you would phrase it for UFC terms. And really, only one man came to mind. There's only one man that came to mind for me, and I think it's everyone's debut fighter, Rookie of the Year, as I like to call him, and that is Carlos Prates. Carlos Prates, ladies and gentlemen, he is currently ranked number 13 in the men's welterweight division, and when he debuted, he was nowhere near a ranked opponent at all. Came in February 2024, takes on Trevin Giles, gets a crazy round 2 knockout, landing a performance of the night bonus. Phenomenal work. Comes back in June, takes on Charles Radke in Louisville, Kentucky, and finishes him with a knee to the body in round number 1, earning himself another 50K performance bonus. Then UFC 305 strolls around in August. People are starting to take notice of him. He takes on Li Jingliang, drops him three times for another nasty face plant knockout. How about another 50K performance bonus? And out of nowhere, he's given a main event at UFC Vegas 100 against Neil Magny, and it only takes him one round to faceplant Neil Magny, knocks him out handsomely, and that's right, four fights in the year, four knockouts, four performance bonuses. He's ranked number 13, and let me tell you some of the names they want him to fight next. Jeff Neal, Colby Covington, Gilbert Burns. He is in for some big things. Easily the debut fighter, rookie of the year. I mean, Carlos Prates, an absolute stud. I mean, this guy, he's eating steaks, smoking cigarettes, drinking whiskey, hanging out with a bunch of women. This guy is not a guy you usually see in the UFC, and he has power in those fists, hailing from the Fighting Nerds gym. If we had an award for best gym, it would easily be the Fighting Nerds. They have some absolute killers, Cal Barallo, Gene Silva, and the biggest breakout star of the year. That is being our Rookie of the Year, Carlos Prates. So Carlos Prates wins our Rookie of the Year. Phenomenal work. Phenomenal work from Carlos Prates. He was exceptional this year. It was a pleasure to watch him fight. Next award, submission of the year. A lot of submissions. None that really stood out, I'll say. None that were really like groundbreaking submissions, if I'm being honest. Obviously, there was a lot. There's a lot of good submissions. One that came to mind was Justus Duplessis submitting Israel Adesanya. I mean, we had only seen Izzy finished once before, and that was by Alex Barra. But to see him dragged down, submitted like that, it was pretty shocking. Not something that you see often with a man of Izzy's intellect, if you will. You also had Islam Makhachev submitting Dustin Poirier in round number 5. That was a very good submission right there. But the one that I'm going to go with, which I think a lot of people are going to go with, was Khamzat Chimaev versus Robert Whittaker in the co-main event at UFC 308, where he just took down Robert Whittaker, mauled him, locks on it wasn't even a rear naked choke almost. It looked more just like a choke right across your chin, and he shattered his bottom teeth. He literally moved his teeth inwards into his mouth. Robert Whittaker's face messed up from it. And Khamzat Chimaev should be getting a title shot right now. I mean, come on. Come on. You know, Islam submitting Poirier, impressive, but we've seen it before. You've seen it before. DDP submitting Izzy, impressive, but that was the way to beat him. With Robert Whittaker, no one had done this to him. No one had done this to him. Sure, Izzy had knocked him out in round 2. But, I mean, that was 5 years ago, and that was just nothing compared to this. What Khamzat Chimaev did was so exceptional, and it clearly earned submission of the year. It was great. It was damn great. You know, you could even have thrown Kayla Harrison submitting Holly Holmes in there. That was very interesting. There's some other good ones. We had Angela Hill getting her first submission of the year. I found that crazy. There's this random Vegas event. Angela Hill, fighter in the women's strawweight division, had never had a submission win in her career. She had like one TKO win in her career as well. And so we just kind of threw out a random pick. We're like, yeah, sure, well, she'll get a submission here. And she got a round 2 submission. It was absolutely crazy. But, I mean, nothing touches Khamzat Chimaev. It was phenomenal. It was beautiful. And it was, like I said, just a pleasure to watch. Truly, I'm telling you guys, this was a banger of a submission. Next award, KO of the year. And, you know, this is the one that really annoyed me. This is the one that annoyed me. It's because, you know, I wanted to pick against this. You know, there were so many good knockouts this year. There were so many good ones. A lot of honorable mentions here. Tom Aspinall finishing Curtis Blaydes. I mean, who does that? Who does what he did there? Volkan Ozdemir knocking out Johnny Walker. That was crazy. If you saw Peyton Talbot's knockout of Giannis Gamori, Joe Pfeiffer face-planting Bara Yute, every single Alex Barrow knockout. He had 3 wins this year, all three of those fabulous knockouts. Esbom Rivovic's head kick on Terrence McKinney. Carl Super getting a 12-second knockout of Alonzo Menifield. Alex Pereira is slumping Matthias Nicolau. You had Ia Topura knocking out Max Holloway and Volkanovski. They were all phenomenal. Vinicius Oliveira's knee on the fight night against Bernardo Sopage, that was another runner for KO of the year. But I mean, you just have to go with it. The BMF fight, Justin Gaethje, Max Holloway, you just have to go with it. And the circumstances around the knockout, I think, are very important too, is that in this fight, you know, Max Holloway's up. you know, people are saying this was fight of the year. This was not fight of the year. Okay, Max Holloway was dominating Justin Gaethje. Gaethje maybe had one round on the judges' scorecard. And we're going in the final 10 seconds, and Max Holloway's doing the fist. He's doing the finger. He's pointing down. He's saying, let's do this. Let's get it on. Let's throw down. And pretty much everyone was like, okay. Gaethje's like, it's game time. Let's get it. Let's do it. And they're trading. And Holloway comes over, clips him, face plants him out cold. This is at UFC 300. He's going crazy. The commentary's going crazy. Everyone's going crazy. And I remember I was with all of my boys in their living room, and we were going ballistic watching this. It survived the test of time. It was the KO of the year back in April. It's the KO of the year at the end of the year. Congratulations to Max Holloway landing the knockout of the year, performance of the bonus, fight of the night bonus for that fight. It was incredible. Incredible moment right there. I will say it's unfortunate that I have to go with that, but I just have to. And I just have to. You know, Alex Baron, Yoel Romero, they both had amazing KOs, but the moment itself where Max Holloway knocks him out with a second left in a five-round fight, That's cinema. That is cinema right there. We use that term all the time. But it truly is KO of the year to Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje. Award number four, comeback fighter of the year. This one was tough. This one was really tough. I was narrowed down to about three people. I had Charles Johnson on here. Charles Johnson went 0-3 in 2023. Was on the verge of being cut. And out of nowhere, exploded this year. Four wins. He's now ranked number 12 in the men's flyweight division. And it was incredible. It was incredible to see it. He even had a crazy comeback win against Joshua Van that no one saw coming. And I was debating giving it to him. There's also Petr Yan. You know, Petr Yan, he had lost to Sean O'Malley. He had lost to Merab Dvalishvili. He was really down in the dumps. Then takes on Song Yadong. Crazy fight there. Takes on Devyn Figueiredo. Beats him there. And Petr Yan was really in the running. But the person we elected to go with for the comeback fighter of the year in 2023. Now, when you look at some champions, I mean, you could even argue someone such as, gosh, who could I choose? Valentin Shevchenko, but no. The man we're going with, he's currently ranked number 11 in the men's light heavyweight division, and that is none other than the former men's titleweight challenger, the uncrowned light heavyweight champion, Dominic Reyes. Dominic Reyes, and the context behind this is he didn't even fight in 2023. Okay, so why is he winning 2023 Comeback Fighter of the Year? Well, Dominic Reyes, unrightfully, was given a bad decision against John Jones. I think everyone can agree that is one of the worst decisions in UFC history. Following that, brutally knocked up Ilham Vlahovic, brutally knocked up Jiří Procházka, brutally knocked up Ryan Spann, doesn't fight all of 2023. Debates quitting, debates leaving MMA. He was done. He was calling it all off, and he says, you know what? I'll come back and try again. Takes on Dustin Jacoby in June. Knocks him out in 2 minutes. Incredible. Comes back in December. Final pay-per-view of the year. Finishes Anthony Smith in dominant fashion. And Dominic Reyes went from being on a four-fight losing streak to on a two-fight win streak. And he's looking at a top-10 opponent coming into the new year. It was amazing to see. And someone coming back from the mental issues he was dealing with off of those losses. It was phenomenal to see. Easily. Dominic Reyes, my comeback fighter of the year. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Now, instead of comeback fighter, we also have comeback fight. So this is the biggest comeback in a fight this year. Now, there were a couple of good ones. This came down to two for me. Now, one was Neil Magny and Mike Mallett, where Mike Mallett was just handsomely winning a fight, and Neil Magny wound up in top position and was just pounding his face into oblivion. It was so funny to see. But this one had real implications. This one was intense. This one was gritty. And your comeback fight of the year goes to Jack Del Maddalena versus Gilbert Burns at UFC 299. I think a lot of people are going to agree. I think a lot of people are going to side with me on this one. And, you know, I don't blame them because this truly was a comeback win. On the judges' scorecards, Gilbert Burns was up. And what was going on in this fight is Jack Del Maddalena just kept getting taken down. You know, round one, he's taken down three times, same number of significant strikes. He actually had more total strikes. Round two, taken down twice, but had 21-9 significant strike ratio. Round three, right off the bat, Burns takes him down. Then Jack Del Maddalena gets back to his feet. Burns shoots again, gets connected with a knee. And with just over a minute left, Jack Del Maddalena gets the TKO win. And he goes from being ranked outside of the top 10 to now be the number 4 welterweight in the world. So this was massive for Jack Della Maddalena. Earned a performance of the bonus for it. Really added to just how good UFC 299 was overall as a pay-per-view. And it was entertaining. Let me tell you, as someone who picked Jack Della Maddalena to win that, watching that, I'm like, oh, there's no way Gilbert Burns just keeps taking him down. Then he gets up, connects him with a knee. Gilbert Burns is falling backwards, gets clipped with a punch. Down he goes, elbows to the head. It was brutal. And Jack Della Maddalena wins your comeback fight of the year. Unfortunately for Gilbert Burns, rough year. 0-2 for Gilbert Burns. But hey, you know what? That's just how MMA goes. Sorry to tell you. Your third to last award, fight of the year, And like I had mentioned, a lot of people truly, truly felt that it was Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje. But I'm going to be the first to tell you that was not fight of the year. When I'm looking back at the whole year, I'm not thinking of that fight as fight of the year. Some others that maybe came to mind, you know, Duplessis and Strickland was an early one. Dustin Poirier and Benoit Saint-Denis was a really good two-round fight. Kyle Barallo and Jared Cannonier, an underrated one, in my opinion. But it goes, there was actually Mike Tabek Orobai versus Matheus Rebecki. That was a dogfight. But this one, the best fight, one of the only good moments at the Sphere this year, Esteban Ribovic, Daniel Zaluber, a random three-round lightweight fight between unranked guys, and war. Just war. And I'm telling you, they're putting some edit music over this on TikTok or Instagram. I mean, this was crazy. 156 significant strikes for Ribovic, 121 for Zaluber. Ribovic was almost knocked out in round number 3, managed to get back up and land 92 significant strikes. These two were bloody by the end of it. And this was just from the get-go, swinging at the fences. It was just non-stop action. It was fantastic. Utterly fantastic. And I mean, I was just going nuts. I was going absolutely nuts. And then, you know, obviously there's a lot of grappling on the rest of this card. But as for this fight, great work, wins my fight of the year. And it's kind of refreshing to see a fight that's not winning the main event of the biggest pay-per-view of the year, winning fight of the year. Now, I won't lie, Poirier versus Islam Makhachev was up there for me. I loved that fight so much. That fight has a special place in my heart. Alex Pereira, Khalil Rountree Jr., another fight I personally loved so much. And I'll even say Ijeet Taporia versus Max Holloway. Just the feeling when you were watching Ijeet Taporia versus Max Holloway is that someone's getting knocked out at any moment of this fight. And lo and behold, Max Holloway did. But you got to give these guys their credit, Zaluber and Ribovic. I love picking stuff out that not everyone's going to know about because you got to go watch this fight. If you want to show someone a fight and it's got to go 3 rounds, pick this fight. This is the fight to show them all. Now, we get into second to last female fighter of the year. The female fighter of the year. I think we picked Alexa Grasso last year, I want to say. I honestly can't remember too well. But this year it's not going to a champion. And this year was tough. This year is tough because when we looked at our champions this year, you know, one's bantamweight, obviously, Julia Pena, Hako Pettin, absolutely not. Valentina Shevchenko, one boring performance against Alexa Grasso is not going to do it for me. Some people are picking Zhang Weili for her dominant win over Yan Xiaonan, but she only had one fight. She only had one fight, and when I look through the women's strawweight division, you know, Yasmin Lucindo made a jump. Jessica Andrade hung around there. Vera Jandroba won a main event. Women's flyweight, I mean, man, if you're out on a main event, Erin Blanchfield picked up a big win over Rose Namajunas, but nothing really comes close to Kayla Harrison debuting in the UFC and submitting Holly Holmes, then beating Kelton Vieira, who's ranked number 2, and Kayla Harrison went from being unranked in the UFC to now being the number 2 women's bantamweight. She's getting the next title shot, and she's the number 7 pound-for-pound woman in the world. Incredible. Incredible. Kayla Harrison is your 2024 female fighter of the year. Deserved too. I want to give her credit. Obviously, the Kelton Vieira fight wasn't the most entertaining thing in the world. You know, I will say that. It certainly didn't really raise any, was it eyebrows is what I'm trying to think of. It just didn't really put anyone on notice. But overall, dominant year for Kayla Harrison. Coming over to the UFC, successfully making the jump. 2-0. Works for me. Good stuff for me. And by the way, averaging 50 significant strikes, 2 takedowns. I'm pretty sure on the scorecards, she has lost 1 round against Kelton Vieira. Other than that, good work to Kayla Harrison. And hey, a title will be in her future. By the way, we're going to be doing our predictions for 2025 coming up. And don't be surprised if Kayla Harrison is my prediction to end the year as champion. Now, final award for 2024. Wow, it's weird to say. It's weird to think the year has come to an end. But you already know, it's Male Fighter of the Year. And it came down to two. It truly came down to two. It was Alex Pereira or Ito Piura. And it was tough. This was a tough decision, guys. I think everyone can agree, you know. And it was quality versus quantity. And it's not saying that Jamal Hill, Jerry Prochazka, and Khalil Roundtree Jr. are not quality wins. It's not saying that. It's the fact Ito Piura beat Volkanovski and Max Holloway, who are the number one and number two greatest featherweights of all time, and he knocked them both out. And he did that in an 8-month span. That's insane. But think of Alex Pereira, who main event UFC 300, has a crazy moment against Jamal Hill, knocks him out, Jerry Prochazka rematch, knocks him out 13 seconds with a head kick. Then the Khalil Roundtree Jr., one of the greatest main events that no one saw coming. I mean, Khalil Roundtree Jr. was up two rounds on Pereira, and the Pereira entered a state of mind, which it's the flow state. Now, people are describing it as the flow state. That's the definition of the flow state. So Alex Pereira is your men's fighter of the year, but Ito Piura a close second, let me tell you that. Pereira, number 3-pound-for-pound fighter in the world, current reigning light heavyweight champion. It's incredible. And honestly, I would give a tie out if I could, but I'd like to just give one award out. Ito Piura, I'm sorry, it's just quantity beat quality here. And when you get three championship wins between April and October, that's another thing. That's another thing. In a 6-month period, in a half of a year, he knocked out three people. Knocks out Jamal Hill, knocks out Jerry Prochazka, knocks out Khalil Roundtree Jr. Alex Pereira won 2024. It was incredible. It was truly incredible. Looking through all the champions, you know, Pantoa, two title defenses, nothing really mind-blowing. Marab, he had two wins this year. Islam, yet again, only one fight this year. Bilal, boring fight, no one really cared about. Driscus Duplessis might have been fighter of the year, but obviously, you know, it's crazy to think that DDP submitted Adesanya was nowhere in the conversation. That's pretty crazy to me. John Jones coming back, but I mean, nothing compares to Pereira. So Alex Pereira wins your men's, or male, I should say, male fighter of the year. And ladies and gentlemen, that'll do it. That'll do it for today's episode. We got a lot of fun stuff coming. We got a lot of fun stuff coming, guys. Let me just tell you that we're going to be ranking every UFC Fight Night main event, every pay-per-view, every title fight. We're going to be doing our 2025 predictions. We got a lot of fun stuff coming, guys. I'll see you guys later in the week for our Week 18 predictions. We'll do one of the things I just listed. A lot of fun stuff to come. We're going to be ushering in the new year with a big Surprise Jet Podcast episode. I'll catch you all. And as always, I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jet Podcast. Kind of butchered that, saying the podcast too much. But you know what? You can't end every episode. Good. I suppose so. God bless, friends.